this week. We correct a little bit of information that we gave you a couple of weeks ago, but more important than that, we begin the first episode in a series of six parts on the occult anatomy of man by Manly P. Hall. This week, we're starting with part one, the human body in symbolism. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
Welcome back to the show. This is episode number 597. I want to thank the supporters of the WCY podcast, which has been in production since 2011 and has been the number one choice for Masonic education in the audio format with so many listeners, whether a contributor, a fellow, or a producer, or even a legacy partner. I want to thank all of you for assisting in the production of this show. Without you, it doesn't happen. If you are curious on how you can support the WCY podcast, head on over to WCYpodcast.com, click on Support the Show, and check out the various options. We also have a shop and a bookstore with Amazon links back to all of the books that are either recommended by myself, the folks who have been on the show, or even books by the folks who have been on the show. It's a great resource. Recently, somebody reached out to me because on our website, under the More tab, we have other projects, which includes Skull and Crown Limited, which is limited edition leather works that I put together myself. We've got a couple of the things on there like Masonic Legacy Society, Truth Quantum, the Civic Freemason, the Masonic Readers Podcast, Masonic Curators, Masonic Radio Theater, our Episode Vault, and even Wilmshurst University. Now, something else that's on there is the remastered Manly P. Hall Lecture Series. This was something that I did a while back, and I cleaned it up to the best of my ability. These were a bunch of recorded lectures by Manly P. Hall that were just out there on YouTube. Somewhat rare, but not totally rare. However, what I did was we digitally remastered a collection of 23 of these lectures, took them in their raw form, remastered them in 320 kbps dual channel constant joint stereo. All the white noise has been knocked down nearly 95%, and Hall's voice is more clear than ever before. So if you click on that, I guess somehow something happened where the link was broken, and I don't know how long it's been broken, but somebody recently hit me up and they said, "Hey, this isn't working. Can you give me access to the Google Drive?" And I re-uploaded and made sure they're all there. So if you go there and you click on his picture, it'll take you to a Google Drive where I've got a bunch of those lectures hosted, and you can download them and do whatever you want. As far as compensation for the access to these, here's all I ask, is that you consider making a donation to the Philosophical Research Society, which is, of course, Manly P. Hall's organization that he started. This also was the brainchild of a good friend of ours, Worshipful Brother Gerald Brown, and he had asked if we would put a link up for the Cure Epilepsy Foundation, which that is also something else you can consider to donate to, or, of course, donating right to this program. So check all those out. So we have to run a correction here. A couple episodes ago, which was titled Initiations Through Space and Time, we read an extensive excerpt from some of Manly P. Hall's work in The Secret Teachings of All Ages. I made a comment, something like, I thought that Manly P. Hall was made a Mason at sight by Henry Clausen. Well, my good friend and brother Adam Kendall hit me up. If the name sounds familiar, probably. He's been everywhere. He's a blue friar, awesome researcher, has done everything. In fact, we had him on the show not too long ago. He hit me up and he said, "Hey, Robert, I was just listening to the latest podcast, and guess what? You made a mistake here, and I was so appreciative of this one. I really wanted to make sure we corrected it." So, actually, very interestingly enough, we have Manly P. Hall comes into Jewel Lodge number 374, which is now Pacific Star King number 136 in San Francisco. He was actually initiated in June of 1954 on the 28th. Then he was passed in September of 1954 on the 20th. And then he was raised to the sublime degree in 1954 on November 22nd. So he even had 2 months between his initiation and passing, and, you know, almost 2 months from passed to raised. And he was a member of the San Francisco bodies of the Ancient Accepted Scottish Rite, coronated a 33rd, Adam believes, in 1973, but he said he was going to check this date. But anyway, he did go through the degrees, and this was really cool. I really appreciated the information. Yeah, of course, Manly Hall went through traditionally all the way back in 1954. Here we go. This week on the show, I wanted to quickly mention MasonicCon Chicago tickets are on sale. You can get a regular ticket or a VIP ticket. The VIP ticket comes with some swag as well as some custom things that we're going to be putting inside each of those packs. The lectures will be recorded, but it will not be streamed. Access to those recordings will be for the VIP ticket holders only, and they'll go ahead and they'll get those links to a password-protected site a couple weeks or a week after the event is over. But MasonicCon Chicago is being put on this year by Space Novum Masonic Lodge, number 1183, out of the grand jurisdiction of the state of Illinois. We've got three local speakers right here from Illinois and four from all over the United States. So it's very cool. We have announced our first speaker, which, if you didn't get the email, is going to be Brother Chad Kopensky, the former state education officer for the Grand Lodge of Ohio. That just went out last week on Monday, and we announced that. So there's that. Now, at the time of this podcast is coming out, there may be another speaker announcement that you've already seen, but I'm not at liberty to say who it is at this time of recording. If you want more information on this, please visit MasonicConChicago.com. It's going to be on September 16th, 2023, just around the corner. As far as presentations, I'll be doing the Masonic Pub Crawl, Freemasonry in America and its Colonial Tavern Beginnings at Battle Creek, Michigan. We're going to be doing a festive board event. There's a few people that are going to be there as well. It's going to be an awesome night of fellowship and education. I'm hoping that everybody just gets re-energized by the great work that'll be happening up there. And then literally 2 days later, I'm going to be in Manasseh Lodge 182 for an awesome Monday night event where I'll be doing Freemasonry, a history of mystery. So I'm pretty excited about that stuff. I hope to see you out there. My thanks goes out to Wallkill Lodge, number 627 out there in Walden, New York. Fantastic fellowship, fantastic brotherhood, and great camaraderie with that entire lodge. What a great lodge. Wallkill Lodge has got it together. If you're ever up in the New York area and you have a chance to go to their lodge, go there and watch some excellence. So this week I'm going to be starting a series, the next six episodes. I think folks out there are really going to enjoy this. This is The Occult Anatomy of Man, by Manly P. Hall. Now, this was originally a pamphlet book that was written and produced by Manly P. Hall under the Philosophical Research Society. Copyrighted editions do exist, which are at print at the prs.org, if you want to check them out. But there's also a public domain version, which is what I will be reading, and it's a digital edition which has been transcribed by Universal Life University, and they have a statement of public domain status within the work. Without any further delay, The Occult Anatomy of Man, by Manly P. Hall. Part 1. The Human Body in Symbolism. In Scripture, we are told that God made man in His own image. It is so stated not only in the Christian Bible, but also in the holy writings of nearly all enlightened people. The Jewish patriarchs taught that the human body was the microcosm, or little cosmos, made in the image of the macrocosm, or the great cosmos. This analogy between the finite and the infinite is said to be one of the keys by the aid of which the secrets of Holy Writ are unlocked. There is no doubt that the Old Testament is a physiological and anatomical textbook to those capable of reading it from a scientific viewpoint. The functions of the human body, the attributes of the human mind, and the qualities of the human soul have been personified by the wise men of the ancient world. and a great drama has been built around their relationships to themselves and to each other. To the great Egyptian demigod Hermes, the human race owes its concept of the law of analogy. The great Hermetic axiom was, "That which is above is like unto that which is below, and that which is below is like unto that which is above." The religions of the ancient world were all based upon nature worship, which, in a degenerated form, has survived to our own clay as phallicism. The worship of the parts and functions of the human body began in the latter Lemurian period. During the Atlantean epoch, this religion gave place to sun worship, but the new faith incorporated into it doctrines, many of the rituals and symbols of the previous belief. The buildings of temples in the form of the human body is a custom common to all peoples. The tabernacle of the Jews, the great Egyptian temple of Karnak, the religious structures of the Hawaiian priests and the Christian churches, laid out in the form of the cross, are examples of this practice. If the human body were laid out with the arms spread in the shape of any of these buildings, it would be found that the high altar would occupy the same relative position in the building that the brain occupies in the human body. All the priests of the ancient world were anatomists. They recognized that all the functions of nature were reproduced in miniature in the human body. They therefore used man as a textbook, teaching their disciples that to understand man was to understand the universe. These wise men believed that every star in the heavens, every element in the earth, and every function in nature was represented by a corresponding center, pole, or activity within the human body. This correlation between nature without and the nature of man within, which was concealed from the multitudes, formed the secret teachings of the ancient priestcraft. Religion in Atlantis and Egypt was taken much more seriously than it is today. It was the very life of these peoples. The priests had complete control over the millions of ignorant men and women who had been taught since childhood that these robed and bearded patriarchs were direct messengers from God, and it was believed that any disobedience to the commands of the priests would bring down upon the offender's head the wrath of the Almighty. The temple depended for its maintenance upon its secret wisdom, which gave its priests control over certain powers of nature and made them vastly superior in wisdom and understanding to the laity whom they controlled. These wise ones realized that there was a great deal more involved in religion than the chanting of mantras and the singing of hymns. They realized that the path of salvation could be walked successfully only by those who had practical, scientific knowledge of the occult function of their own bodies. The anatomical symbolism which they evolved in order to perpetuate this understanding has come down to modern Christianity, but the keys to it, apparently, have been lost. It is a tragic situation for religionists that they are surrounded by hundreds of symbols which they cannot understand, but it is still sadder that they have even forgotten that these symbols ever had any meaning other than the foolish interpretations which they themselves have concocted. The idea prevalent in the minds of Christians that their faith is the one and only true inspired doctrine, and that it came parentless into the world, is unreasonable in the extreme. A study of comparative religion proves beyond doubt that Christianity has begged, borrowed, or stolen its philosophies and concepts from the religions and philosophies of the ancient and medieval pagan worlds. Among the religious symbols and allegories which belong to the world long ago before the coming of Christianity are a few to which we would like to call your attention. The following Christian symbols and concepts are of pagan origin. The Christian cross comes from Egypt and India, the triple mitre from the faith of the Mithraics, the shepherd's crook from the Hermetic mysteries and Greece, the Immaculate Conception from India, the Transfiguration from Persia, and the Trinity from the Brahmins. The Virgin Mary as the Mother of God is found in a dozen different faiths. There are over 20 crucified world saviors. The church steeple is an adaptation of Egyptian obelisks and pyramids, while the Christian devil is the Egyptian Typhon with certain modifications. The deeper one goes into the problem, the more he realizes that there is nothing new under the sun. A truly sincere study of the Christian faith proves beyond all doubt that it is the evolutionary outgrowth of primitive doctrines. There is an evolution in religion as well as in the physical form. If we accept and incorporate into our doctrines the religious symbolism of nearly 40 peoples, it behooves us to understand, at least in part, the meaning of the myths and allegories which we borrow, lest we be more ignorant than those from whom we secured them. This brochure is devoted to the problem of explaining the relationship existing between the symbolism of the ancient priests and the occult functions of the human body. We must first understand that all sacred writings are supposed to be sealed with seven seals. In other words, it requires seven complete interpretations to understand fully the meaning of these ancient philosophic revelations, which we have liked to call Holy Writ. Scripture is not intended to be historical. Those who understand its literal meaning understand the least of its meaning. It is a well-known fact that Shakespeare, for dramatic reasons, brought together in his plays characters who had actually lived hundreds of years apart. But Shakespeare was not writing history, he was penning drama. The same is true of the Bible. Scriptures leave historians hopelessly involved in self-contradictory chronological tables, while the majority of historians will remain under the judgment day. Scripture furnishes excellent subject matter for debates, and also ground for hair-splitting over the meaning of terms and probable locations of unknown cities. Many of the biblical landmarks, now pointed out by guides, were named hundreds of years after the birth of Christ by pilgrims who suspected them of occupying sites somewhere near those mentioned in the Bible. All this may prove convincing to some, but to the thinker it is conclusive evidence that history is the least important part of Scripture. When the Empress Helena, mother of Constantine the Great, visited Jerusalem in 326 AD, she discovered that not only all traces of Christianity had already been lost, but that a temple dedicated to the goddess Venus stood on the hill now accepted as Mount Calvary. Less than 400 years after the death of Christ, there was apparently no one in the Holy Land who had ever heard of him. This does not necessarily imply that he never lived, but it certainly does indicate that the halo of miracles and supernatural atmosphere with which modern Christianity envelops him are largely mythological, like all other religions. The Christian faith accumulated a weird collection of fantastic legends, which are its own worst enemies, for they have taken the simple moralist of Nazareth, the man who loved his fellow creatures, and built around him a superstructure of idolatry, which loves no one and serves only itself. As Buddha in India merely reformed the Brahman concept of his day, so Jesus reshaped the faith of Israel and gave to his disciples and the world a doctrine based upon that which had gone before, but remodeled to meet the needs of the people who surrounded him and the problems which confronted the Jewish nation. The Essenes who educated Jesus were of Egyptian or Hindu origin, and his faith incorporated the best of that which had gone before. The records preserved of him are largely allegorical, and the simple man is plunged by them into a great sea of supernaturalism. This was not entirely without purpose, however, for as Shakespeare took license with history in order to present essential truths, so it seems the historians of Jesus used the character of the man as the groundwork of a great drama. He becomes the hero of a seven-sealed story, and those Christians who have studied symbolism can gain from that story the key to the true Christian mysteries. They will then realize that Scripture is perpetual history, that it pertains to no nation or people, but is the story of all nations and peoples. It is a wonderful thing, for example, to study the life of Christ in the light of astronomy, for he becomes the sun and his disciples the 12 signs of the zodiac. Among the constellations we find the scenes of his ministry, and the procession of the equinoxes, the story of his birth, growth, maturity, and death for men. Again, the tortured chemicals in the retort further reveal to us the life of the Master. For with the key to chemistry, the Scriptures become another book. In this particular work, however, we can only concern ourselves with the relationship of these allegories to the human body. We discover that the life of Christ, as found in the Gospels, has been conventionalized until it agrees perfectly with the lives of dozens of world saviors. For all of them are also astronomical and physiological myths. All of these myths come to us out of the most remote antiquity, where the primitive races used the human body as the symbolic unit, and the gods and demons were personified out of the organs and functions of the body. Among certain Kabbalistic writers, the Holy Land is mapped out on the human body, and the various cities are shown as centers of consciousness in man. There is a wonderful study here for those who will investigate deeply and sincerely the ancient mysteries. We cannot hope to cover all the ground, but if you can gain from this booklet a key to the situation, we hope you will peruse the line of thought until you have made it all-inclusive and opened at least one seal of the Book of Divine Revelation. This concludes part 1 of the Occult Anatomy of Man, the Human Body in Symbolism. Something that we should mention, a couple of things actually, is that a lot of these pamphlets and brochures that Manly P. Hall put out had been revised later. Some have been unpublished, some exist only at the Philosophical Research Society, and this is because new discoveries and new ways of thinking and even politically correct nomenclature has had to be edited into these works. Now, the Occult Anatomy of Man, how much of this is relevant? Well, still a great deal of it is very relevant. There is an air of doubt in this paper that Hall tends to have early in his works, where he gives small amounts of credence to the idea that, of course, this idea that Jesus of Nazareth didn't exist. He's a made-up character, just the son, a archetype for a story. However, we know emphatically that the man, Jesus of Nazareth, existed. Regardless of your religious view, the man lived. Also, there are some leaps that are taken within this that spiritualists and certain types of esoteric-minded folks are going to agree with a lot of the attributions to things like in places like Lemuria, Atlantis, these sorts of ideas. Again, whether you believe in those or not, it doesn't really take away from this text as a sort of New Age text and a take on the human body, at least in the terms of understanding what he's trying to do here. And what he really is trying to do is to say the building is the temple, and the temple is the man. And there's a wonderful corollary to this that is echoed within Freemasonry. If you have listened to a wonderful part of Patrick Day's work for this podcast, Masonic Mythbusting, he actually dives into this whole idea of Christian appropriation from pagan ceremonies and rituals and traditional history. And it's not so much a stolen as borrowed, accepted, amalgamated kind of thing. So take that with a grain of salt as well. But I hope you did like this. Next week we're going to be back and we will read part 2, which is called The Three Worlds, which he dives into as being part heaven, part earth, and part hell. That's it for this week. I want to thank you for joining us. Once more, big thanks, big shout out to our contributors, fellows, producers, and legacy partners for making this program. I would like to invite you once more to check out the website, MasonicCon Chicago. If you're looking for any leather goods, check out Skull and Crown LTD. You can find a link to that on WCYpodcast.com. And lastly, if you're enjoying this series, I am completely serious when I say make a donation or head on over to the PRS's website, the Philosophical Research Society, become a patron of theirs, and by that I mean go to their shop and buy stuff online, support them with donations. That is a critical beacon of light in terms of spiritualism, esoteric wisdom, even Freemasonry in these United States, maybe even the world. Anyway, until next week, stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson. Take care.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.
WCY Media.
That's it. Here's your...